Unibet. Episode 128. Matt McIlvain, Head Coach, Red Bull Salzburg.
It's between the ears. That's what carries the weight, and that's what becomes more difficult. And we work the whole season, you know, at learning those skill sets to be able to handle pressure in big moments. And of course, you can use lines like it's a privilege, and it is. But and even going into game seven, we use language with our team like we earned the right to be here. You know, it wasn't like we backed into game seven. If we would have sit here in July and we would ask everybody, hey, would you guys take finals game seven? You don't have to grind through the regular season. You don't have to grind through the playoffs. You just get to go to game seven. Would you take it? Everybody would take it. Of course you would.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht?
Unibet Hockey O'Clock. It's become a near and dear to my heart tradition on Unibet Hockey O'Clock to have the championship winning head coach of the Ice Hockey League on the program. It happened again for him. It happened again on the Unibet Hockey O'Clock podcast to have him on. It's no one else than Matt McIlvain, the two-time championship winning head coach of the Ice Hockey League, and he's now on the Unibet Hockey O'Clock line. Coach, thanks so much for recording this quite literally last minute while you're on Austrian turf.
I'm happy to be here. I'm glad we could make it work out. And, you know, under those terms, especially if it's the special recording for the championship coach, I'm always happy to do it.
Coach, how big of a shout do we have to give your wife? You're leaving on Monday. We're recording this on Sunday. The pod will come out on Wednesday. So as I've put it, it's quite literally the very last day for you and your family in Austria and everyone who's ever moved and knows how difficult it is when that one day comes closer when you finally have to leave and you being quote unquote allowed to be doing this. How appreciative do we have to be of your wife?
I think I need to take this question and I need to answer it very honestly and deeply, if you don't mind me going that direction. But 10 years ago, I asked my wife, Don Jackson has a position open here in Austria to be an assistant coach. I said, I don't think there's any chance I could do that. Do you think? And she said, of course, I think you have to. I think you need to go follow your dream. And so we made a plan that we were going to do it for a year. And all of a sudden, a year has fast forwarded into two children and 10 years. And now we've built a life together. And you look at it and you see the success our organization's had. But it's not just my wife. It's all the wives and all of the support system that we have behind the scenes. You know, going on this podcast is just one small example of how supportive my wife is, of how I'm allowed to go do stuff I love to do and pursue my dream of becoming a professional hockey coach. And yeah, I mean, only word that I think of when I think of Megan is absolute and total support and then gratitude from my side.
And that's one of the points that we as commentary team try to hammer home during not only the finals, but also during the playoffs. If one thinks about hockey players and being entertained by them, you usually watch them on weekends, which means they don't have a weekend. You usually watch them in the playoffs every 2 days, which means they don't get as many off days as you do. And having a family, a supporting system in place can't be underestimated for sustained success, which the Red Bulls enjoyed. I want to get to that. I want to get to a lot of things I got unusually, or I got so many user questions. Obviously, there's still thirst for knowledge as regards the past season of the Red Bulls. So I decided to divide this into three parts. The first part's basically us looking back on the season and everything that led to
a tremendous finals series, probably the best finals hockey we've ever seen. The second part will be about the finals, and the third part will be about you taking the next step. But I want to start it off with just looking at the recent history of this podcast. What does it say that you're following Mike Keenan and Francois Allaire, or what's the lowest common denominator of those three people, including you, apart from championship winning hockey coaches?
It feels like that's different categories of people in hockey resumes, but it's great company to be around, I can tell you that much. And Francois came and visited us in Munich, and just an absolute legend of the game. And Mike Keenan, I've never had the honor of being able to meet, but you can't talk about legendary coaches without starting to mention Mike Keenan's name. So
you're moving up the ladder. Not a lot of people who've coached in a league just 4 years, won two championships, and that's something that will forever remain with you. But if we turn back the time to July and August, when the team was put together, when the team was coming together, and you just had a championship winning team at your hands from April of 2022, what were you looking for in regards of that new team? What had to be different for you and your team to remain successful?
Yeah, I think the first place that we had to turn was we had to take a look at a few parts of our roster that were open. We had a lot of changeover on our defense corps, and Vinny Liverdi, moved on, went in a different direction. TJ Brennan went in a different direction. Keegan Kanzig ended up retiring to become a firefighter. And then Jan Michael Järvinen up front made a decision to go back home to Finland, for personal reasons. And just it left us a little bit with some holes to fill in our lineup, and things that we knew we liked on our team from the championship season was we knew we liked gritty defensemen. We knew we liked guys that took a lot of pride in keeping the puck out of our net, but had enough skill to be able to move the puck for us and advance it and contribute once we get to the offensive zone. And so that was sort of where we set out. And we found, we found a guy like Dennis Robertson, that fit that mold for us, really, really well. We found a guy like Che Genaway, that came in and added a little bit of offense for us. A little bit of skill and dynamic play. Of course, we lost Alex Palastrong as well, who moved back to Vorarlberg for personal reasons. And we needed a right shooting defenseman. We found Tyler Lewington, that ended up being a guy we were chasing for a couple years, but to get a guy that played in the NHL the year before and then come in. And then, when Kanzig retired, there was only one guy on my mind just happened to be available. That was Andrew McWilliam, to be able to add a little bit of grit to our back end. And then as you go up front, we thought that Troy Burke would be a really great addition for us up front. And unfortunately, our fans didn't get to see him very much this year until the playoffs. But Troy has a tremendous skill set. And, he's a wonderful human that contributed for us in the end. So on the personnel side, that was sort of our first mission, was putting a team together. And then came, the ability to be able to forecast, what is the season going to look like? And, the biggest thing on my mind was we had a lot of guys with very short summers, meaning we had guys that played deep into the playoffs, then went to the World Championships, then got done with the Worlds. And we're talking about like 5-6 week summers by the time training camp started. And so that's going to be something we have to contend with. And then, the MVP of the league last year, Peter Schneider, spent his summer in the Army. And so they finally tracked him down at 30 years old to go in and serve his time. So we knew that, he might be dealing with some time missed because of some training. And we knew that we were going to have to deal with some adversity. And, when you leave the finals you know, in the playoffs, 12-0, it's like everything went as good as it possibly could. And you look back at the individual games and you know they're not perfect, but the results, that you feel that over the course of time, getting our guys very ready to be able to handle adversity was going to be a big theme for us this season. And that was sort of where what we gathered as far as putting our team together and then creating themes that we were going to move forward with into this season.
I want to touch on one of the themes, and if I missed it last year, please correct me on that, but the whole brotherhood angle seemed newish to me. Last year, when we had this conversation after you won your first championship, you talked about the team building back in the summer of 2021, where you went mountaineering and you really bonded, and the team came up with that kind of mountaineering clip thing that with each and every player victory, you attach a clip onto the road to the championship with 12 clips for obviously 12 playoff wins being available. But this year, the dominating topic kind of seemed to be the brotherhood. How did that come all about?
The brotherhood's been here and it's been evolving for my 4 years here. And you know, it's for me, I think that there's power in connectivity. There's power in people being together and working, you know, together to try to accomplish a goal. I heard a great quote one time that I believe in my heart, and it's that if you don't get the locker room right, the big moments won't happen when you need them to. And the flip side of that is that that can be, you know, your superpower is the unity. And so, you know, every year we set out in the preseason to do some team building things. I think the reason that it echoes a little bit louder after last season is when you go through the COVID year and you literally can't get together. It's go to work and go home. There's no extra bonding. And there's no extra time together. I think guys realize how special that time together is and how valuable it is as a team. And so we did some very similar things at the start of this season because we were a new group. And we wanted to make sure that the bonds are going to form organically and they're going to form over the course of time. But we also want to make sure that we give them opportunities to form on purpose. And actually Red Bull hosted us for a really neat team building event. They put us on the DC6, which is a really old, unique Red Bull plane. I think there's only one in the world like it. They flew us to the Red Bull ring to go watch MotoGP. And that experience in itself was amazing. It was so first class and so on brand with Red Bull. And as I go into the, you mentioned last year, ring by ring, step by step became a theme for us through the season, you know, and how we were going to handle some things. But I'm always kind of looking for, through our team building or through training camp, I'm looking for something that we can grab onto over the course of the year. And we were flying on that DC-6 and it flies in a unique way. It's not perfectly straight. It kind of tilts a little bit to the side. And
it's loud.
It's loud and there's smoke coming out. And we flew right into the mountains. And so there was a lot of turbulence and the guys were all up like gathering and greeting each other and visiting. And then the turbulence hit. And then everybody just gets low and they start like kind of crawling back to their seats and they go in and they all buckle up and they return to their seats and they just kind of click their seatbelts. And I watched what happened when the turbulence came, and I watched everybody return to their seats and buckle up. And I said in my head right then, I was like, that's it. That's where it is. That's where the power is. I said that we knew adversity was going to be our thing. And this year, what we're going to be learning when turbulence comes, that we can buckle up. We're going to talk about all the soft skills that need to happen, all the mental skills that need to happen when adversity comes. And we're gonna learn that we can trust the pilots, and the pilots aren't necessarily the coaches or whatever. It's us. The pilots are the process, and we're gonna learn that we can just we know that the process, you know, just like the Red Bull pilots are the best in the world, you know, our process has been proven, and it's been able to get it done, and we just need to learn to be able to go back to our seats and buckle up. And so you made a point about last year we had 12 rings, and I know your viewers won't see it, but I'll just describe this to you. So this year for the playoffs, we had a board that our team manager built, and on it is printed our logo and the Brotherhood. And we had 12 individual airplane seatbelts that we used. And each win, we got to buckle one up. And it ends up, you know, being a nice thing that we could work with. But that became a big theme for us through the season, because we had a lot of adversity and there was a lot of reasons to doubt. But being able to have that place like your seat that you can return to and buckle back up and then get reset into trusting the process, that was a big, big theme for us this season.
The thing is, and you were indeed right, the listeners can't see this as this is an audio-only podcast. We nevertheless record the video with you, may be allowing for it, maybe just a couple of weeks, months, or years down the road. Well, we might be able to share this, because you got up, you got the board, you showed it to me, looked really neat. And it's just one of the many things where listeners on the outside don't really know what's going on the inside with these kind of motivational tools and everything that the coaches and people involved are coming up, and obviously the players themselves. So at one point, I might just put that video out, cutting myself out, obviously, because it just doesn't look nearly as good as the board does. The one thing that I'm always interested in when you're winning a championship, and we've seen it time and time again in all of sports, not only in hockey, but in American football, in basketball, in soccer, it's so hard to go back to back. And when you talk to coaches or players who are on defending champions teams, they always say the pressure is so intense. And I know one of your mantras has always been pressure is a privilege, but how big did that bullseye on your back indeed feel when you headed into the year?
That's one of the blessings about coaching Red Bull Salzburg, is that I don't think the bullseye ever goes away. And it doesn't matter if you were the champion or not. I think that when teams play us, they get excited to play. And I feel like we've seen that every year. That makes those years feel, you know, when you're coming back, that part feels normal. You know, it feels like any other year. I think that I read Phil Jackson's book, 11 rings, right before the season, because I said to myself, I was like, gosh, who's got some experience at coming back and coaching a champion team? And I said, well, gosh, this guy's done it 10 times. So, better go get him. And, so I read his book and I was just looking for inspiration about some things that you may see. And, you know, the reason it's hard to go back to back is because, you know, motivation is fleeting. You know, like you can be motivated for a moment and not, but discipline gets you through. And, you know, that's what our guys, you know, had developed. It was that discipline, keep pushing, even though, you know, they had won the year before, they wanted to do it again and to be able to push through the hard moments, knowing that there's a feeling at the end that you're chasing. And what you're doing today will help you get it at that moment. And so our guys really did embrace that.
Now, as I've said before, a lot of users, a lot of listeners do still have questions on a great championship campaign. And one of them just tackles the question of the biggest challenges during the season. One might say, from the outside looking in, had to be the injuries. Was that the case, or was it something completely different?
My first thought on that question is injuries and sickness. That's the number one thing that we had to deal with this year from an adversity standpoint. I mean, you know, Ty Loney's a pretty good player for us. And, you know, we didn't see Ty a whole lot this year. You know, Troy Burke is a pretty good player for us, and we didn't see him very much this year. And that doesn't even start to go into injuries that, you know, Thomas Raffel was out for a long time. Dominic Heinrich was out for a long time. Ali missed some games. Schneid's missed some games. You know, you can sort of go down the list and you can see guys that had been sick for phases, injured for phases. You know, we had to go through again phases where we've got, you know, 10 guys out for moments of games. And I remember we played really well against Rogla at home in the Champions League. And then we went to Rogla and we got beat bad. And that was a great moment for us actually for learning in the season, because we were able to use it moving forward. But what I didn't realize in the game was how many guys were playing sick and then how decimated our lineup was going into those next games. So now we're playing short going into, I think it was December, you know, where the season really starts to pick up, and we've got 10 guys out, you know, and we're playing multiple games. And honestly, it's good for us because it's good for our youth to get experience and step up and guide us. But, you know, we had to wait out some time before we were going to be successful again as a team. And we had to start monitoring ourselves for things other than wins, and just be able to keep taking steps forward. And that for sure was a big factor in our season. I know Klagenfurt dealt with it a lot this year as well, but I'd say we're kind of 1A, 1B, you know, as far as having to deal with that kind of adversity this year.
And if we just consider the Univet stats, Ty Loney played 9 out of a possible 64 games. Troy Burke played 21 out of a possible 64 games. Just shows how much you missed some of the difference makers the league has seen in years past. And then obviously the young guns did step up and were a pleasant surprise. Actually, not most of the time, all of the time, we were able to see him. And I know coaches do hate name dropping and singling players out, so you can name a couple of them, but whose ascent in those tough times that you just mentioned made you kind of proud and maybe even surprise you?
I think you can't start this conversation without talking about Paul Huber. You know, Paul has just jumped into you know, bigger roles as soon as holes have opened up for him. And he's such a big body, and he's such a great puck protector, and has great net front presence. You know, he was able to score 10 goals for us this year, and he contributed in a lot of other ways to our team. But his development, you know, is, I don't know that we were totally surprised, but, you know, he jumped up when the opportunity was given. Lucas Toller as well, got over 10 goals this year. And, you know, there's another guy that, you know, took opportunities that were given. He saw time on the power play this year. He saw time with top guys. You know, he jumped in when his name was called and did a lot of different things for our team. But he's really strong on his skates. He's got an excellent shot and a really bright future. I think it we're not talking about young guys right now, but, you know, you can't not mention Peter Hochhofler and Mario Huber in this conversation, because they both took a giant, giant step. And that is what the adversity allowed. It allowed these guys to step up and step in and just grab roles. And, you know, Mario had a career year. Peter Hochhofler had a career year. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, the adversity and the opportunity and then working at their craft. And all these four players that we've just talked about and named, they spend countless hours working on their craft, and it's great to see the guys like that get rewarded.
One of the interesting questions that I got, and we'll get to Don Jackson in a bit, a question that came from a listener too, was about your exchange with Don Jackson and how often during a season do you indeed communicate? How often do you talk to each other? Did you talk to each other during recent campaigns?
It's been less more recently. And I think we've just both got so much going on. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you've got your best friends from your hometown that you can go back with. And as soon as you spend the first moments together, you just pick up exactly where you left off. And it doesn't matter how much gap has been in between. That's my relationship with Don. You know, he's my mentor and my very, very good friend. And we'll exchange messages to each other, just briefly, congratulations on the win, great job. We'll talk, I don't know, once a month, but it's definitely gone down a bit as I'm getting more comfortable being a head coach. And, you know, I think that, you know, I look forward to us being able to keep our relationship and keep in touch, because, you know, when you work shoulder by shoulder with someone for 6 years, you sort of share a mind at some point. And, that's where I feel like we left off, was that we more or less, were sharing a brain. And, you know, I'm just so grateful for him, and what a legendary career he's had. My gosh.
You know, we'll just tackle this one right now, because last year when you had the pleasure, hopefully, of having this conversation, I got a voice message from him. He immediately had a video message for you after winning this year's championship on behalf of Red Bull Munich. 2 days later, he became a champion another time in Germany. He's leaving the game in Germany by having coached more than 1,000 games, having won 705 of them, and that at a win rate, I think, of 65% plus, which is incredible. What's German hockey gonna miss this upcoming campaign due to his retirement?
Class. That, you know, that's the first word I think of with Don. He's just such a classy man. And to be able to list off his accomplishments and then understand how humble this man is, and you know, to be able to realize how much integrity that he goes about every day with, you know, he's a first class human and first class hockey coach. And, you know, for our organization, you know, here at Red Bull, he'll be missed. But he's in the perfect place now, you know, where he can mentor our coaches, you know, from professional on all the way on down. You know, he's here to be able to help, and he's moving on, but not gone. And that's a gift for Red Bull.
One last question that reached me from fans that regards the season, and it does include a little bit of the playoffs, because I want to talk about the finals separately, is about the line change that happened during the playoffs with Thomas Raffel being injured, and you just having to juggle lines again and again and again. And then Tim Harnisch ended up on probably the premier line with Nissner and Schneider. And I have to back this up a little bit, because I think at a certain point we just said each and every one of those lines Red Bull is rolling out could be a first or a second line on any team in the league. But what made you decide on going with Harnisch in the first line, and even after Thomas Raffel came back, rolling with him in the quote-unquote fourth line with Baltram and Meyer?
Yeah, you can just take any of those lines and you can list them however you care to. So we didn't really feel like we had a first line, and we didn't really feel like we had a fourth line. Felt like we had four lines that could really play. And that really helps if you want to try to win, especially, and if you want to beat a team like Bozen, you know, who boasts the same kind of a thing. And you know, Tim Harnisch, I remiss for not listing his name earlier, but Tim has really grown a lot this season in his dependability on the ice. He's always been an exciting, up-and-coming young Austrian player. But what he's done over the course of the last couple of years is, you know, earn our trust as coaches to be able to go contribute to the team in big minutes and in big moments. And he played a lot of really important ones for us down the stretch. You know, I think that what we were trying to do was create balance. We felt like that was going to be our advantage, was if we could roll out four balanced lines and any of them have a chance to score. And, you know, our quote-unquote fourth line, I think, scored two pretty big ones in the last game. So That was what we felt we could do, was that we could have four lines that had a chance to score. And Tim was a great compliment, we felt, for Benny and Peter Schneider.
The finals. It is Salzburg against Bolzano, the best two teams of the regular season. Your first year in the league, 2013-14, you've been an assistant coach to Don Jackson. After the regular season, the best two teams of the season were, of course, Salzburg and Bolzano, who met in the finals as well. What was your initial thought when we knew what the finals 22-23 were going to look like?
I told some people here internally that we knew it was going to be my last run with our team. And Klagenfurt beat us 2 years ago in the playoffs. And we did so much learning as an organization and as a staff in that moment. And before the playoffs even started, I said, I think it's going to have to be Ferivar, Klagenfurt, and Bozen, because, you know, Ferivar was our finals matchup the year before. Klagenfurt, you know, we haven't beaten yet as a staff, and we're going to have to overcome that hurdle as an organization and as a team. And then Bozen feels like full circle, and you know, that we're going to get another shot to be able to beat them in a game seven or an elimination game like that. And it sort of felt like it was maybe meant to be.
One of the questions that did indeed reach me as well was what you were able to learn from the regular season games against Bolzano that helped you during the playoffs. And then when I read the question, I kind of wanted to rephrase it a little bit. Is there anything to learn, or are playoffs, as we often, as broadcasters put it, a whole different animal?
Lots. So I'll go back and answer the original question first. If you're not learning through those regular season games, you're making mistakes, because what you're learning is how are they going to be able to create offense against you? How are you going to be able to create offense against them? What are their threats? What are they trying to expose? What are the tactics that they use? How do they adjust their game plan against what we do? How can we adjust our game plan for them specifically? What do we need to emphasize? Because if, as a coach, we can't emphasize everything. We have to say, these are going to be the important things. This is what we have to make sure we get done. So we've been going through that all the way through the regular season. And I don't exactly remember our regular season record, but I remember the first time we played them, we were very short. They beat us bad at home. Then we had a better second game. I think we beat them. Then they beat us 1-0. It was right after a break, if I'm not mistaken. And then we played them in the last game of the season. And we played a very young lineup, and we played a tight game. We ended up losing that one, but played a very tight game with them. And so what we felt kind of coming out of the regular season, especially that last game, even though we played young, and they didn't have anything to play for. You're just watching the 5-on-5 hockey. And we felt like we were a good matchup. You know, as we felt like we were going to be able to handle them. We felt like they were going to, we felt like we had an idea of what they were going to try to do. And we definitely learned from all those regular season games, just to give the fans an insight into process. I went through all four of our regular season games getting ready for the playoff series. So we pulled chances, we pulled breakouts, we pulled forechecks, of course goals, but we'd go back in and dig through all those little things from November. But it's the same team, so we know that might be Dustin Gaisley might like to do this specific thing. So we better make sure that we're not allowing Dustin Gaisley to do that.
But that's only the start of the cat and mouse game, and with Bolzano and Salzburg having staffs that are both advanced in video editing and everything that goes into it as well. Of course, Bolzano looked at the four games as well, but how does it work during a series? How often do you adjust and readjust? Is it period by period? Is it even during periods, or is it indeed from game to game?
Adjusting and emphasizing, I think, are a little bit different. And what we've got to make sure that we're constantly doing on the bench, constantly doing between periods, is emphasizing the important parts. And we're also alert for, you know, what are they going to change? What are they going to adjust? Because without question, they changed their game plan after losing three in a row. And it wasn't anything we hadn't seen before. It was just stuff we hadn't seen before from them. And then you have to reemphasize, because the way that our system works is we have one, more or less, but it has a whole bunch of iterations to it that we can adjust to what the opposition is doing. And so all we have to do is we have to adjust what we're emphasizing then, and then continue to reemphasize that part. So the playoffs, it's a constant, you're playing that, like you phrased it, that cat and mouse game tactically. But also it's meant like mentally to be able to stay, away from the intrusive thoughts that come in so naturally and be able to keep our focus. We call it on task, but, that's the big challenge.
We're heading into the finals, two low scoring games, series one apiece. Salzburg pulls off two in a row. Is that first elimination game in Bolzano? We as broadcasters get to the rink, and literally no one expects to be at a game six or even a game seven. Trophy is in the house, and we go to the first overtime. We go to the second overtime. We go to the third overtime. Finally, there's a goal. It's the second longest game in league history. How do you look back on that fateful day that eventually brought us a great series, but I guess you and your staff, some minor headaches?
To be really honest with you, like, I knew this was my last run with the team, and I was just enjoying what we were doing so much. Like, the moment by moment joy, as cliche as that sounds, I was truly feeling it. And I didn't care that I had to watch more video. I didn't care that I had to go like get everybody's minds reset and get ready for the next. I didn't care that I had to prepare again. It didn't matter. Like, I was just so enjoying what I was doing personally. And I think for us as a staff, I think there was a lot of that. It was like, we went in the locker room afterwards. We told the guys, this game's as hard as it is to do this, that hurts. This game's going to stay in this locker room, and it gives us the best chance to reset. And then we will learn from it, which we did the next day. And then we got ready for game six. And you know, the truth is that everybody says that the fourth win is the hardest. And our language with our team is, we don't necessarily believe that, because we feel like it's a little bit disrespectful to the opposition, because they're always trying their best to win those games. You know, and the first games, they're always trying their best. And what happens is that's mental part that gets difficult. You know, it's between the ears. That's what carries the weight, and that's what becomes more difficult. And we work the whole season, you know, at learning those skill sets to be able to handle pressure in big moments. And of course, you can use Lions like it's a privilege, and it is. But and even going into game seven, we used language with our team like, we earned the right to be here. You know, it wasn't like we backed into game seven. If we were to sit here in July, and we would ask everybody, hey, would you guys take a finals game seven? You don't have to grind through the regular season. You don't have to grind through the playoffs. You just get to go to game seven. Would you take it? Everybody would take it. Of course you would. And you know, we had to be able to reset and go into it with that type of a mentality. Otherwise we were going to be in trouble, but the guys did a great job.
The series goes back to Salzburg after a memorable game. The series heads back to Bolzano after a tight loss on your home ice. And one of the listeners that sent in a question obviously observed you after the game and wrote, he stood on the bench for quite some time on his own. Was that you kind of saying goodbye to the rink that you called home for 4 years?
I think so. It was, I think I did it as well. Let's see, maybe game four. you know, at home, I stood out there for a little bit and watched a little bit longer, just because I thought that might be the last one. But yeah, I think I really tried to take in moments along this way. Like, and that was, you know, probably caught trying to take in a moment. But you know, it's such a blessing to be able to be here and coaching these guys. And probably that's what somebody saw.
If a hockey game were 58 minutes long and not 60 minutes long, Bolzano would be the champion right now, and I'd probably conduct this interview with Glenn Hanlon. But as a hockey game does have 60 minutes on the clock, you were able to win the championship because of Nikolaj Meyer's championship winning goal 1 minute 42 seconds before the end of finals game 7. Lead me through your emotions when that goal happened.
Well, I'll take you to the second intermission first. Just sort of went in there. Going back to the beginning of our interview here today, we used words with our guys about how we've been training to buckle up since August. And we've been talking about it and working on these skills to be able to handle adversity all the way through. And we had a genuine belief, I think, in the coaching room, and I know it goes right through the players as well. Somehow, some way, we were going to make that happen. And when you watch Thomas Raffel play in the third period, you just knew he was going to do something great. You know, like, it was just a matter of time, because he was just like a man on a mission. And you know, he scored the goal to tie it up. As soon as he scored to tie the game, I knew we were going to win in regulation. I didn't know why or when or whatever. Just had this feeling inside that it's like, as we were also playing really well. Nikolaj Meyer, you know, Che Genaway steps off the wall and pounds a slap shot that Nico tips in. And I think my first thought is getting ready for 5-on-6. That was my very first thought. It was, I don't even know that I took a moment to celebrate that. Maybe there's a fist pump or something. I don't know. You'd have to look at the video for that. But I think my mind went immediately to 5-on-6 and resetting our bench. I even asked the guys, I said, should we take a timeout right now to get ourselves kind of back together and reset, and kind of went back to, no, we're okay. We can do this. So started talking to him about 5-on-6 right away, because we knew the goalie was coming out. And yeah, I think that the you know, the big moment came, you know, at the end, when you could see which way the puck was going to go, you know, in the waning seconds.
I want to get to the final horn, to the final buzzer in a bit. But if I had told you right before the start of the finals, or maybe the playoffs, did you play the finals without scoring one single goal on the power play? And granted, Bozan has got a great penalty killing, but the previously hot power play that scored a goal in 7 out of 9 playoff games up to the finals turned ice cold in the finals. What would you have said to me if I told you no power play goals during the entire finals run?
Not possible. That's what I would say. I don't think that's possible. We were joking as a coaching staff, maybe that's the first time in the history of hockey that a team's gone to game 7 and won and not scored a power play goal in the finals. I don't think that's happened before. You know, the special teams are such a big deal. I give Bozan so much credit, because their penalty killing was great. You know, and sometimes, you know, the truth is that for us, our power play is one of the biggest triggers for our guys to get us off track. That's some of the turbulence. And that was like the ultimate test to us being able to buckle up. And it was probably just a part of the story. It was a way that it had to be.
You know, the Unibet statisticians like to be challenged anyway. So that's a challenge for them to find out if it ever happened before that a game 7 winner in the finals has never scored a power play. The one thing that's always great, doesn't matter who wins a finals game 7, is just the pure elation that you're seeing on one bench, and obviously the other kind of emotional destruction on the other one. Now, the emotional elation part that went your way, and you were indeed so happy and in tears, and normally your composed self and one hardly ever sees you celebrating like this. And you always allude to it each and every championship and each and every win and victory is special. But in what regard did this one, the second one, feel differently than the first one?
Probably just the story felt different, you know, like winning four, you know, that was something extremely, extremely special. And the games were all closer than the series, you know, ended up being. And there was a lot of bumps along the way. I think we scored 5 or 6 goals in the last 5 minutes of games to win games. And so, you know, it didn't have to be that way. It was just the way that it turned out. I think that, you know, having the playoffs go a little bit longer, you know, going through that big loss in game 2 in Klagenfurt, and then getting as a group reset and ready to go be great for the next games. And then, you know, being that close to being able to smell a championship twice, you know, and having those games not go your way, to go to a game 7. You know, there's, you know, when my son is 6 years old and he plays hockey in the driveway just about every day after school, and he doesn't make up situations in the driveway that he's scoring the game winning goal in game 4. You know, it's like game 7, you know, in game 7, you know, McElwain scored. And you know, that's the kid's dream. You know, that's every kid's dream is game 7. And I think, you know, that probably made it feel a little bit different. And, you know, to your point, Daniel Franck was the first guy that I saw, and I shook his hand, and I just told him, I was like, I don't even know what to say. I feel like you guys should have won too. And it feels so weird saying that, but like those guys, they competed so hard, and they did such an amazing job battling back. That team's well coached and they're organized. And, you know, you went through the line, and, you know, even Che Genaway told me, he's like, I kind of feel bad for them. You know, like they, as much as you feel great about what we accomplished, like they were great. They were great. And it made for a great final series.
We always label it the beauty and the brutality of playoff hockey, and especially game 7s, that one team moves on and eventually can win the ultimate prize, and the other team's season might not be deemed a failure directly, but obviously not a success as well. So that's obviously how it goes. But I want to use this as kind of a segue to the last part that we'll quickly talk about. I know you're a busy man. I know you're moving tomorrow, so there's still a lot of things to be done, and still a lot of goodbyes probably to be shared. If I just read out some of the things from the Unibet stats, and hopefully you're bearing with me, what will remain, or what's going to be the one thing that you're most proud of when your Salzburg time officially ends, probably from a contractual standpoint, midnight tonight? You've coached 64 games this year, 145. Incredible hit rate win rate of 70%. If we look at your career coaching as a head coach in the Ice Hockey League, 235 games, 158 wins. Again, win rate north of 65% at 67.2. You've played and coached 8 playoff series. You've won 7 of them. I guess all those numbers have been music to your ear. Which one made them ring loudest?
I'm sorry to like discount your question, but as you're reading that, my thought is that it's not about me. It's people. You know, my memories of Salzburg aren't going to be winning percentages or playoff wins or things like that. My memories of Salzburg are going to be people, and all of the great people. Our coaching staff, on and off the ice, you know, our staff around the team, the players, man. Like that, it's all about them. They get that done. It's not the coaches. And you know, truth is, you know, head coaches do the podcast and we do these interviews and we probably get way too much credit. But you know, the way that the assistant coaches work, and you know, I've had great staffs coming through here. To me, and I'm grateful to the Unibet guys for doing that research. I'll copy this. I'll put it on a resume someday. But my memories aren't numbers. You know, my memories are going to be people, and how thankful I am to be working with so many great people.
I'll get back to this at the very end to make this come full circle as well. But of course, people with excellent knowledge of the hockey scene and the newspaper guys and others had rumors very early that this could be your last year in Salzburg. Indeed, even the last press release that Salzburg sent out, where they said that you and the organization would be parting ways, obviously in mutual terms, and you'd be seeking a new adventure in North America, didn't have the team that a lot of newspaper outlets and other experts had way before when. So apparently it's going to be the American Hockey League affiliate of the Anaheim Ducks. You might correct me if I'm wrong here. But the one question that fans are always asking, how does it work? At what point do you get hold of interest from bigger leagues and bigger organizations? And how does the process work of you taking into account that, oh my, there's interest and starting to pondering what might happen? How does it work?
Good question. Yeah, you got the teams right, and you know, that's San Diego's, that's their news to release. So that's why Salzburg releases it open ended, and then they coordinated in with the media, so it was announced soon after. The one thing I can say is that I've been with Red Bull for 10 years, and you know, this is a first class organization. And I would not leave Red Bull for a job. You know, it wouldn't be a job that's like, hey, you know, that sounds like a better job or a better league. The only thing that I felt like I could leave Red Bull for would be an opportunity. And Pat Verbeek is the general manager of the Anaheim Ducks. Pat and I have known each other a bit. You know, for the last 6 or 7 years, he's had different jobs in Tampa Bay and then Detroit. And then he's got this recent job with Anaheim. He and I have been in touch, just talking hockey, just a couple little things. I actually trained with his son at one point in time. And, you know, just a couple hockey people that talk about, you know, various things that come up in sport development or prospects, etc. And yeah, he had an opportunity for me to come in and become a part of their organization, and you know, be able to help them bring their prospects from the American Hockey League into the NHL, and you know, to be that close to the National Hockey League, you know, where your job is now feeding players directly into them. That's exciting. And I think that for me at this point in our life, it just felt like it was the right time to be able to make a move, and got a great relationship with Pat. The organization is in a really exciting place right now, even though it's been at the bottom. That just means that there's room to grow. And to be a part of that was very intriguing for us.
It is indeed interesting, because not only the Anaheim Ducks finished last in their conference, but also their affiliate, the San Diego Gulls, did finish last in their division in the American Hockey League. And I always wonder how coaches, especially new coaches to an American Hockey League level, approach this, because there is this fine line between developing players, knowing that it's for the greater good for the organization, but also trying to stay or remain competitive in games, even though you might know that the talent level might not be evenly matched. How do you try to walk that fine line?
I'm I'm thankful for my experience in Salzburg. That's what I can say, because we've got two big goals. You know, we want to develop and we want to win. And, you know, we've got to incorporate the academy and we've got to incorporate the players into our team. We've got to bring in some players to help for Munich and get them ready for German hockey. And, you know, I feel like I've been grooming for that part. And we will never change our language about trying to win. Like that can't be, because I feel that the best way to develop athletes is in a winning environment. And we'll have championship standards. We'll hold guys to them, and we'll get really excited about chasing that part of it down. And then, you know, it's a unique league, because all of a sudden a bunch of top prospects can come into a team, and you can re-recruit in the summer, and you can turn it 180 degrees around in an incredibly short time. And so that's going to be what we all get excited about. And, you know, it brings me back to, you know, last year. We had been 6 years since Salzburg had lifted the trophy, and we created a theme for our team that was "The Chase is On." And it was about chasing down the Bosons and the Viennas and the Klagenfurts that had won the championship between the last years, since Salzburg had hoisted the trophy. And to me, that feels like the right theme to start with in San Diego, is "The Chase is On." You know, there's a lot of teams to chase right now, and there's a lot of open opportunities with the big team. And let's start closing that gap right away.
Next to last question goes to a user or a listener again. He was wondering, and that's a good spot to ask a question, as you were referring to the "we" fairly often. Is there a face from the Salzburg bench that might join you on a San Diego bench, or is that still up to be decided?
I can't comment on contractual stuff here in Salzburg, but I can tell you that we're going to be retaining our coaches in San Diego. Chris Spar, who was on the bench with me here in Salzburg, is already there, and there is a bench, a familiar face.
Last question. Thinking back on those 4 years being a head coach, obviously that the 1 year as an assistant coach, the 10 years in the greater Salzburg region with Munich as well, what's the one thing that you're going to miss most when heading back to North America full time?
People. You know, I alluded to it before. It's people. You know, this has been a real community for us. You know, my children both went to kindergarten. My son went to first grade this year. You know, my daughter was born in Munich. You know, you work with people for 10 years. You know, it starts to feel like family. You know, the players and all the effort that they've gifted us with, you know, you're just so grateful, you know, and just to watch people evolve, you know, and watch how Thomas Roffel turns into like the greatest captain you could ever imagine. And, you know, we've mentioned Mario Huber before, but you just love to see these kind of guys grow and have this kind of success. And that's what we're going to miss the most, is all the people within the hockey organization, but also the community that have brought us in and befriended us and, you know, made us feel like we're a part of it.
Coach, you mentioned so many different people, but there is one certainty: you'll be missed as well. The league loses one of its main class acts, if not the class act. Always a pleasure, or it's always been a pleasure working with you. Hopefully at one point we get to do this again. Wish you nothing but the best for that new endeavor. Have a great time getting acclimatized in a not too bad to live in city, just like Salzburg. Thank you so much for doing this. Enjoy the last couple of hours in Salzburg, and all the best for the near future.
Thank you so much, and keep up the great work.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.